Yeah, my name is Jerry Pearson. You know, here's what I wanted to do today, is I wanted to take the first part and just share with you kind of what's been kind of striking me and what I conveyed to Bob last month when our other speaker was here. And then I want to take the second half, and I actually have a presentation that I want to walk through that gives you an idea of how I look at the capital markets, and I'll kind of define what those are. And we'll actually have those on a PowerPoint. I actually have some with me as well that I'll hand out. So that's something that John suggested, that we should get a little, maybe get it more interactive and share with what we do. But here's effectively my premise, is that the capital markets are a place where there's a lot of things going on, and there's a lot of integration that you come to understand over your career. And that, to me, very much parallels the way I understand my faith and my Christianity, how I understand systematically what Christ has done for me. And so that's really, in essence, my premise. And it's not just for me. I have a unique position because I get to look at how all kind of things fit together and the influences they have upon each other. And I can see that you almost have to have a systematic approach to understand how the markets operate. And I think the same thing is true in our Christian faith, is that we need to be able to articulate why we believe what we believe, how we believe it, how we came to believe it, what we're learning. And so that's really my premise, and it's not unique to me. Maybe I'm in a unique position because I see it more, but I think we can see God in each of our jobs, even if we're retired. We should be able to see that as well. So that is effectively my premise, and what I wanted to do is just share with you just some of the examples of how I see that brought out in my job, and maybe that'll speak to you in your job as well. Because, you know, a lot of times I used to think, well, my faith at work is, it somehow has to mean, well, I've got to be witnessing to everybody all the time. And I'm not really that good at that necessarily. And maybe there are some people here, please talk to me afterwards, because I think all of us kind of struggle with that. And so it kind of dawned upon me that my faith at work is really the further understanding of my work helps me further understand and grow in my faith. And so one of the verses that came to my mind was from Hebrews, where the author says, you know, we need to move on from milk to solid food. We need to become more mature. And so that's what I see happening in my life. As I mature in my understanding of the markets, I can consistently also mature in my understanding of my Christian walk. So that's kind of my premise. And then what I wanted to do is take, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes and just define the terms a little bit. So when I say capital markets, a lot of people think, you know, that sounds like an interesting term. As Bob said, I've had a lot of experience, almost 30 years. If you were here for the last speaker, he talked about asset-backed securities. I traded a lot of asset-backed securities. I ran a trading desk at the Northern Trust in Chicago. I was chief investment officer of Fifth Third Bank, Florida. And I'm here in Grand Rapids. I have a place, as a lot of you know, I have a place up in the Glen Lake area. And so I'm really very fond of Michigan. And so I'm usually here during the week at my office. I attend Monroe when I can, which isn't as often as I should, as I'm reminded by various gentlemen here, because I'm not in Grand Rapids. I'm more so up in Glen Lake, where I'm very active in Glen Lake Community Reform Church up there. The capital markets, easy way to think about it, global equities, domestic equities, big stocks, little stocks, international stocks from developed countries, international stocks from emerging countries, individual countries, individual regions. So you might have the Far East, you might have Australia, Canada, Latin America, any type of equity security. That's how I would define global equities. Second would be global fixed income. Our previous speaker talked about that a little bit. You have treasury bonds and agency bonds. A lot of people are familiar with those. You have municipal bonds. Maybe you've heard of those. You have mortgage bonds. You have asset-backed bonds. You have high-yield bonds. Those are from companies that are below investment grade. You have international bonds. So, again, a lot of different choices in the bond market. Third would be commodities, which you're probably hearing a lot about now. You'll continue to hear more about. They've been a very instrumental part of what's going on right now. Commodities would be things like gold, silver, agriculture, crude oil, energy, other base metals like copper. And then finally, I would put in there foreign exchange. And so maybe one way to think about it, and foreign exchange would be things like the U.S. dollar, the euro, the yen, the Swiss franc, the Australian dollar, Canadian dollar. One way to think about the capital markets is, question one, what do I want to buy? Do I want to? And so whatever you want to buy, you can answer that. Two is how am I going to pay for it? Am I going to borrow against it? That's where interest rates come in. And three, with what currency am I going to pay for it? And so that to me is kind of the definition of the capital markets. So when I talk about capital markets, and I'm going to go through some examples of how they fit together and how they integrate and how things change over time, that's what I'm talking about. Then when I talk about Christianity, I thought it was important to give a definition of that too, because sometimes we just kind of gloss over that. My definition of Christianity is I come to God only on the basis of Christ's righteousness. Nothing I do myself, nothing I can do to earn it. A lot of people think, gee, I got to be good, I got to go to church, I got to do these things. Wrong. My only basis and avenue to God is through Christ. And so I think of that old hymn that, it's only by His blood that I gain access. And so I'm trying to, I had it, now I'm kind of thinking about it. My hope is based on nothing less, right, than Jesus' blood and righteousness. So that's what I define as Christianity. And understanding what that is and what we have and how all those things connect together just for me has been growing more, that now I understand, kind of almost a systematic theology. So when I read in Genesis, I can see God at work in the same way that Christ is at work in Luke. And so just to have that type of understanding, I get a daily reminder of that when I'm at my job every day, managing money on behalf of other folks, et cetera. So to really understand, what your faith is and to understand the markets and within which you operate, it's got to be kind of a systematic integration. Because right now, for instance, in the marketplace, yesterday was kind of an interesting day. Not a good day for my portfolios necessarily, because you had commodities going lower. And so I know automatically if commodities go lower, that means most of the foreign currencies are going to go lower, and that means the equities are going to be under pressure. That's exactly what happened yesterday, because I understand those relationships. And then similarly, we've got to be in a position where, we're always open and receptive that whatever we might be encountering, God's speaking to us in that as well. How do I understand God's grace to me today? How do I understand that my faith is developing, et cetera? The other thing is that, all of us are older than we were yesterday. And so we have experience. And that plays a part as well, because that's kind of the challenge aspect of what I wanted to say. I'm better at managing money today than I was 10 years ago. I have more experience. I have more insight. We have to be able to say the exact same thing about our faith. We've got to be able to say, look back 10 years, I'm more mature than I was 10 years ago. I'm more knowledgeable than I was 10 years ago. And if that's not the case, we need to certainly strive to make that happen. I have two examples of that. First one is I like sports quite a bit, and so I watch ESPN or listen to ESPN. But one thing you hear people say, particularly quarterbacks, when they come into the National Football League, after they're there a couple years, they kind of say, wow, the game started to slow down. I think the same can be said for our jobs and our faith. Is things have got to slow down. So all of a sudden you see the opportunity, and instead of it passing you by, you're able to recognize it is what it is for itself and be able to act upon that. So at least in my faith and in my profession, I see things as slowing down a little bit. I'm able to understand them better. I'm able to react to them better, maybe even anticipate them better. The second thing I would say is that I think, again, kind of unlike the football example, where when you're 32, 33, you're very close to the end of your career, we should be getting better all the time. And I'm also a runner. I enjoy running. And there's something in running called the negative split. And what that means simply is when you run a race, you want to run the first half of the race slower than you run the second half. And so that means that your time in the second half of the race is actually a little bit slower than in the first half of your race. That's what a negative split is. And the best example I can find of a negative split is Jesus. For 30 years, he did stuff, but it wasn't that impactful. And then 3 years, he's all of a sudden really starting to crank it up. He's all over the countryside ministering, proclaiming the gospel. The last week of his life, he's really sprinting. The last day, he's running all out. And I just think for myself, I have that challenge for myself, is I've got to be running faster as I get older. And so as I get more mature, I should be in a better position to share and to maybe, you know, kind of encourage people. Similarly, in my work, I should be getting better. All of us should be as we continue to mature. If it's something that we're dealing with more on a mind, if certainly we're professional football players or, you know, like golfers, there's going to come, right? There's going to come some, you know, kind of declining of the abilities. But for most of us, I think it's going to be something where we're going to want to become better as we get older. The other thing that I really enjoy about my position, maybe it's similar in yours, and it's something I really enjoy in the Christian life, one of the things that is hardest for me is boredom. I really dislike boredom. And so I find that my job is very spontaneous. I don't know what's going to happen from day to day. I like that. I really enjoy spontaneity. And similarly, I think in our Christian faith, we have a lot of spontaneity, too. We have a group that meets Saturday mornings, a men's Bible study. And one of the gentlemen there, actually also the pastor of the church up north, just made a comment that really stuck to me, that the early church looked at each morning as a new resurrection. And I've just kind of tried to take that on a little bit. Every day is a new day. We don't know exactly what we're going to encounter, but we're certainly prepared in Christ and we're equipped. But I really enjoy spontaneity. I enjoy the fact that I don't know what's going to happen. Some of you may be in a job where you don't have as much spontaneity, and that's probably got its own set of challenges. I would have a difficult time with that because I really like the fact that it's new, it's spontaneous. I'm not exactly sure, you know, what's going to happen. One of the things where my analogy breaks down dramatically is the fact that in my world, and maybe in yours, the capital markets are always changing. Right now, and I'll show you with some of the things that I'm going to present in a few minutes, I mean, a lot of the markets are very much linked. They act the same. If I would have been giving this talk last year and somebody said, well, what do you think of the equity market? All I would have said is all you need to do is just watch the Japanese yen. Whatever the Japanese yen does, I will assure you the equity market will follow. Because that was the indicator then. That's not the case anymore. It used to be interest rates. That's not the case anymore. Right now, commodity markets are very linked to particularly exporting-based foreign exchange and foreign currencies. And so I know which one of those is what's going to happen. Right now, if you want to know what the stock market's going to do, just look at the price of copper. Many times that'll lead. And we had a conversation with one of our larger hope-to-soon-be clients last year. He said, well, aren't you surprised that the stock market was up in December? I said, no, absolutely not. Because I just watched the price of copper continue to see it appreciate. I know the market's going along. That'll eventually break down. All these relationships will break down, and they'll change. That's where my analogy stops, because we serve a God that never changes, immutable. Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, forever. So I don't have to be concerned that my relationship's somehow going to change. He's not going to change. I might change, but he's not. That, to me, is just a tremendous sense of relief that I serve a God that is non-changing, and that I can depend upon him to be my rock and never be changing whatsoever. So that's a nice contrast I have, that I see the capital markets changing relationships. I'm not going to see my relationship with God and Christ change. The other things that I tend to learn is, some of the attributes, things like humility, perseverance, discernment. But I would say, one of the sayings that I like to have, and I wish I would have come up with it, but I didn't. I'm not really sure who did, but I plagiarize it shamelessly, is that inflation is the answer to every question. And I'll talk about that in my presentation a little bit. It's a little catchphrase, but I think in many cases it's very true. I would make the case that in ultimate reality, Jesus Christ is the answer to every question. But when it comes to things Christian or spiritual, I think humility is the answer to every question. And so I just look, whenever I'm in a situation I'm not sure, I just look at what would be the most humble thing to do. Not always good at doing it, but that's something I try and remember. And again, if you look at Christ and his position being God, descending down to become man as well as God, that's ultimate humility. And so one thing that I don't have a problem doing, I don't have a problem admitting I'm wrong, because I'm wrong every day. And so I get a lot of practice at it. A lot of people I've noticed, even in our, you know, we're at Morgan Stanley. We really have our own investment shop, and we're kind of housed within Morgan Stanley, if you will. I see a lot of people that really have a hard time admitting they're wrong. That surprises me. But people get so good, because, again, that's just pride. And I struggle with that just as much as anybody else does. But it's the one thing, I mean, after, you follow a certain path and a certain strategy in the markets and you're wrong X amount of days in a row, it's not very difficult to admit you're wrong. And so that's something that at least is helpful. Perseverance. I mean, we need to persevere in our faith. If you read the first half of the book of Revelation, that's what Christ's message is to each of the churches. He that perseveres, he that overcomes, steadfast. That is mentioned quite a bit. And it's the same. The same is true in the markets. The same is true probably in any of our jobs. Is it's easy to give up. It's easy to quit. It's easy to be discouraged. And we've got to persevere. And we've got to keep that enthusiastic attitude. And then one of the things that I've been really trying to focus on recently is just discernment. Particularly in my walk and in my faith, and then also in the markets. I mean, I look back on it. There were some things going on at the end of the year that I missed, that I overlooked. I don't hold myself accountable to understand because what happened yesterday, by the way, is going to happen again today. I mean, you're going to have equities under pressure, commodities are going to be under pressure, various currencies are going to be under pressure. So the way my portfolios are positioned, this is going to be another negative day. I'm not saying I could have avoided that, but there were certain things going on at the end of the year, certain relationships that were changing. And it was evident that they changed because I mark everything to market every day, so I know exactly where the markets are. And I just kind of sloughed it off, it's the end of the year, whatever. You know, you kind of shut it down for the holidays. I should have been more discerning to recognize some of those changes and at least be in a position to perhaps reposition things a little bit to be more beneficial to what we're encountering now. The final thing I'll say before I transition into the next part is that I would just, and this is kind of the challenge, we should be as expert in our Christianity as we are in our job. Okay? I take a lot of pride in what I do. I think I do it well. I'm sure all of you do the same thing. You've got to have your Christianity at the same level. Now, Henry, it's a little more challenging for you because you're in the church, but I would argue that even with a pastor, I mean, you want to know the word well, you want to counsel people well, you want to speak well. But as well as you're able to do that, your personal relationship with Christ has also got to mimic that. And so that would be my encouragement, is that you need to be as professional in your Christian walk and being able to articulate it, being able to understand it. You know, Brian is a golf coach. I used to play golf. I've been on sabbatical now for, this is going on 13 years. I'm golf free. Thank you. My name is Jerry. Yes, thanks. But, you know, the golf swing's very intricate. I mean, you've got to know a lot of stuff. To be a coach, you've got to understand. You've got to understand psychology. You've got to understand all these things. You know, and you've had some nice success at Kelvin. You're very good at that. That's similar. All that understanding in our jobs applies to, you know, challenge ourselves. Do we really understand our faith? Do we really understand what it is we believe, why we believe it, that we're able to articulate it? And so that would be my challenge, is that you have the same level of confidence in your faith and in your walk as you do in your ability to perform your job. And if it's the other way around, I think it's equally as valid. I still think clearly that our Christian faith and our relationship with Christ should be preeminent in our lives, but we need to be very good at both. So that was kind of what I wanted to share, because that's how I see my faith at work, is through that understanding and that growth and maturity. It's not, I try to share with people when I can, but it's not, I don't know, are some of you like me that you just kind of feel guilty that you ought to be like always having a Bible in your hand and always, kind of inviting people to this and that? Am I wrong? So I think a lot of people kind of share that. But that's what I realized when I listened to the speaker last month. This is really how my faith's at work, is through that understanding and how I relate it to what it is I do. So with that, but hold on a second, John. I got to give my transition here. All right, so kind of, usually, I mean, the crowd's, you know, always different ages. How many people remember the Doobie Brothers? There we go. One of their bigger songs was Listen to the Music. Remember that song? You can start playing it in your head right now. I was thinking about bringing my iPod or something and actually playing it. One of the things that helped me remember things are acronyms. And so, again, this isn't my idea. I wish it was. I'm very good at taking other people's really good ideas. I'm not as good as coming up with them myself. So, John, why don't you go ahead and go to that first slide? No, the one previous, the first one. There you go. And so what I've developed, I've used this for several years, is I use the word music as an acronym to kind of give me an overview of what's going on in the economy, what's going on in those capital markets I referred to in stocks, bonds, currencies, and commodities. And so each of the letters represents something different that I want to take a look at. So John, go ahead and go to the next one. So the M is monetary policy. We're going to take a look at that. That's what the Fed does. The Fed actually controls one interest rate, the overnight interest rate for money. But they have an effect on the rest of the interest rates throughout the curve. But go back. Keep on the slide I was on. There you go. U is for unemployment claims. You might not know about that. That's a number that comes out every Thursday morning at 8:30. It's the best coincidental indicator. If you want to know how the economy is doing, that's a very, very good indicator to see how the economy is doing. S is for stock prices. That's pretty straightforward. The I can use it either way. I can either use interest rates or inflation. And because today's so special, I'm going to use them both. And then C can either be commodities or currencies. And so, again, I get to cover all those four markets that I talked about earlier. And so what I do is just that helps me remember and kind of just lets me kind of reset, if you will, kind of what's going on. And so some of this will be, I'll try to make it not technical, because the bottom line is I want to convey a little bit of an understanding of how things piece together, why things do what they do, because one of the things that I'm very driven by, and one of the main ways that I run money is I want to look at relationships. I pretty much assume that markets are efficient. I was going to do a little game. When I ran the desk at Northern, we devised a game. Again, we stole it kind of from another company, surprising. But we had a kind of a game that would test people's acumen at reacting to understanding how markets are created and how prices change. I was going to do that, but I don't think we have quite enough time. But that is what, you know, what I want to try and convey is just have a little bit of an understanding. And so I look at how different markets look at each other. If the markets are efficient, for the most part, wherever the market is priced, I kind of think, okay, that's efficient. One of my little sayings is markets are always efficient. They're just not always correct. You can efficiently process the information and come to the wrong conclusion. But clearly, from day to day, that happens. The first day, Monday of the new year, the markets actually went up for the most part. Yesterday, particularly commodities, went down pretty dramatically. Well, what happened between those 2 days? Well, nothing. Just a different interpretation of the information. So Monday's prices were efficient. They weren't correct. And I know that might sound subtle, but I think it's important because too many people think, you know, like I'll get somebody talking to me, it's like, oh, that looks like a great opportunity. That's really wrong. It's, really? Billions of dollars flowing into markets is wrong? They've overlooked that fact? That's generally not the case. So let's go to the first slide. And, oh, by the way, I have these as well. So it'll help you maybe take a look at them. I think I've got, no, I can see, that's all right. There you go. That'll help you because that's not showing up that well. Because again, a lot of these pictures will be contrasts, and so it will be good to maybe have them yourself so that you can see them. Have we got enough? If we don't, please, you know, make sure at least every table's got one that you can take a look at. So my first one in my music acronym is monetary policy, and let's just break it down a little bit. The white line that you see there, and this goes back, if you look at the upper left corner, that's the date. It goes back to December 1999. So it's looking at the last 10 years. That white line is the Fed funds rate. That's where the Fed sets their overnight rate for money in monetary policy. So you can see that in the early part of the decade, it was up pretty high. It came down. And then it went up again. And so then in June, in 2006, you can see it's up at 5.25%. And then the beginning of the recession that we encountered, you can see precipitously that rate falls all the way down to roughly 0.25%, between 0.25% and zero. And it's been there for quite a while. It'll stay there for quite a while. It's probably not going to move this year. It's going to be a long time. I'm going to show you some pictures here. And I think it'll help you appreciate the gravity of what we went through. I'll just say flat out, I have never been as concerned in my career as I was in October 2008. We were looking over the abyss, and I'll show you what the abyss was, in my opinion. Very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. And I mean, again, the Fed just released their statement yesterday. They're not convinced we're out of the woods yet. Not all the markets are convinced we're out of the woods yet. You just look at the unemployment rate and you see we're perhaps not out of the woods yet. This orange line is something that is called the yield curve. And the yield curve is just simply, if you look at what the 10-year Treasury rate is, which right now is about 3.35, and you look at what the 2-year Treasury rate is, which is about 60 basis points or so, and you subtract it. And so that's the difference between the 10-year Treasury rate and the 2-year Treasury rate. It's called the yield curve. If somebody said to me, you're on a desert island, you only get one thing to look at to try and understand what's going on in all these capital markets, it would be close between two things. One of those two things would be the yield curve. Because that's the bond market's way of saying what its expectations are going forward. The great thing about the bond market is it's all mathematical. I can tell you exactly what the bond market expects interest rates to be 5 years from now. You just have to decide whether you agree or disagree. That's how you invest in bonds. So if you look at this, you can see that at the beginning of in 2000, the yield curve started moving up pretty dramatically. And what that's a signal of is that's a signal that the bond market is basically saying we expect the economy to start expanding and perhaps the Fed to start easing. And so you can see that these are kind of inverse to one another. So as the yield curve steepens in 2001, you can see the federal funds rate coming down. That's kind of we'll get into 2001, that's kind of a recession that we had. And then in 2003, you can see the yield curve starts to flatten. So that orange line starts going down. That's the bond market's way of saying, hey, the Federal Reserve better start raising interest rates to cool the economy off a little bit. And so, again, you see the bond market going down. Then you see in 2006, 2007, once again, the same thing. The bond market starts that yield curve starts to steepen. That's the bond market's way of saying, while the economy's encountering some difficulty, the Federal Reserve perhaps needs to lower interest rates. And you can see that's exactly what happened. So you can see that the yield curve got up to a pretty steep level at the beginning of 2010. That movement down in 2010, that's what the Federal Reserve was looking at and was getting fairly concerned, is they were saying the Fed, the bond market's kind of seeing the economy soften. We're not sure. So they stepped up their quantitative easing. You can see recently the bond market has steepened back again. So that yield curve has steepened, which would kind of be an indication maybe the Fed needs to ease a little bit more. They can't. The rates are as low as they can go. So this is the dilemma. I mean, Ben Bernanke, don't know what your thoughts about him are. I think he's a really, really smart guy. He's in a really tough position because we got all these confluences, and, I mean, this is something that they are certainly looking at. So right now the bond market's kind of saying perhaps the Fed needs to ease a little bit more, perhaps the economy is maybe starting to grab hold. Where I would get concerned is if that orange line went down below 2. If the bond market, if the yield curve started to really flatten, that would be a sign that the economy might perhaps be moving into kind of double dip territory. The next slide is U for unemployment claims. Again, a little more innocuous, but I had to come up with a U, so it was very important. This is something that's released every Thursday at 8:30 in the morning. So today's Wednesday, so it'll be tomorrow. This is the same time frame. Is it goes back to December 31, 1999. And in this case, whenever it goes up, that means more folks are filing for unemployment, and that means the economy is probably slowing. And whenever it goes down, that means less people are filing for unemployment, and the economy is increasing. So you can see, let's just walk through it here. In 2001, see that big spike? What was that? September 11th. Right after that occurred, the economy slowed dramatically. This is why I think this is such a good indicator, because it's almost instantaneous. So you can see that we actually had a recession in 2001, and you can see that we kind of came out of that, started to move back down, and then in 2005 something happened that spiked unemployment and kind of caused the economy to sputter for a short period of time. Do you remember what that was? If you were in New Orleans, you'd remember what that was. It was Katrina. Right? Remember we shut down the oil fields for a couple weeks? This, again, I just want to give you the calibration of how good of an indicator this is, how quickly it responds. Now just look at the gravity of what happened in 2007 and 8 relative to what happened in 2001. Unemployment claims got all the way up to almost 650,000. That compares with a spike you know, back in 01 of 500,000. Just look at it visually. You can see what a different situation we were dealing with in 2007-08 than we were in 01. Now, as you can see, look how quickly we've come off. The economy has improved. There is no question about that. I know maybe it doesn't feel like that all the time, but if you look at the economy in aggregate, we have clearly improved, and you can see that this has been a fairly precipitous downtrend, but we're still well above where we were in terms of unemployment claims. Unemployment is going to be something we're going to be stuck with for a long time. I would be surprised if we got below 9% unemployment this year. It's going to continue to be a drag. One of the things, there's always, every sword has a double edge. Productivity is a great thing, but at least in my business, in the financial business, productivity has caused, pick a number, millions of jobs. I mean, I remember when I was at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. That's when I first came to Chicago. I used to be an analyst in New York, and I came to Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and I was director of marketing because they needed somebody that understood what derivatives were and could talk about them to people and explain them. And on our desk, we didn't have computers. We had TVs that showed kind of the prices of the various commodities on the floor. And there was this company in Chicago called CRT, Chicago Research and Trading, and they actually had these things called PCs. And you just look at the advent of what's happened, and I think it's prevalent in our economy overall. I would think the same thing is true. Is it true in real estate as well? That productivity and the technology has just made so many jobs unnecessary. And so I see that as just a major trend that's going to be difficult to change. So I think unemployment's going to be with us for quite some time. But this is an indicator to keep an eye on, and you can see clearly the economy is improving. The next one that asks is stock prices. And this is the relationship I was talking about earlier. I'm changing the date here. I'm just going back a year now. So now it's only a picture of the last year. And the white line is the S&P 500. And that orange line is the price of copper. And so that's what I mentioned earlier. Particularly, look at it over the last 4 or 5 months. It's a glove. So whatever copper does, the S&P 500 does. That's not going to stay the same. That's going to change. And so people, when you start hearing about it, because if you were following the financial news, like I said a couple years ago, the Japanese yen was the surrogate for the price of equity, and people started to talk about it. This will eventually change, but right now it's a good indication. Copper was down yesterday. It's down again today. That's why I'm very confident that equities are going to be under pressure, perhaps for the next couple days. The next one, my two eyes. Here's something that's kind of exactly the opposite. Here's interest rates. So what I did is I kept the white line the same. And in this case, for whatever reason, it diverted to March of 2010, but it doesn't matter. The white line is the equity market. In this case, the orange line is the interest rate or yield on the 5-year treasury. And so you can see for the first part of the year, interest rates were a pretty good predictor of equity performance. So when interest rates went down, stocks went down. And when interest rates went up, stocks went up. And then all of a sudden in August, it changed. And so that's if you're looking at how these relate together, you say, wow, okay, something happened. And so you need to look at other types of relationships to say, well, what happened here? So you basically had a Mexican standoff. You had the stock market going up and the bond market, interest rates continuing to come down, the bond market kind of saying, you know what, the economy's really struggling, it's not gonna really take hold. The stock market saying, we think it is. Somebody's right and somebody's wrong. In this case, come early November, the bond market acquiesced and said, you know what, we're wrong. Interest rates have gone up fairly precipitously over the last 2 months because the bond market was wrong. Now, it doesn't happen often, but it was wrong, flat out. Stock market's been right. And so the stock market was able to discount a stronger economy. So you can see then the bond market now getting back in line to its relationship with the stock market. Now we're kind of back to where when interest rates go up, stocks go up. So not surprisingly, yesterday interest rates were down a little bit when stocks were down. The next one is inflation. And I think this comes back to my statement earlier that inflation is the answer to every question. This is a picture. In the bond market, there are these things called TIPS. They're called Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. And what they do is instead of getting a coupon like you normally get on a bond, you don't get a coupon. Instead, you get the rate of inflation as your coupon. You get a little coupon, and then you add onto that the rate of inflation. So we can see what the bond market expects the rate of inflation to be. This is simply a picture going back to, in this case, January 2002, of what the bond market expects five-year inflation to be. And so you can see we're kind of moving along in the middle part of the decade, kind of between, you know, almost 3% and 2.5%. And then look at what happened in 2008. That's the abyss. That's what the Fed was looking at. We went from an expected inflation rate of 260 down to almost negative 1%. That's deflation. People say, oh, inflation's really bad. Prices are always going up. Inflation is a great thing. Make no mistake. Because if you don't have inflation, you have deflation, that means you have no demand for stuff. If you had a friend in Japan, ask them how that's been going the last 15 years. They are in and out of recession year after year because they're in deflation. Their prices keep going down. We're seeing that in homes, right? Home values are in a deflationary trend. They're going lower. Commodities certainly are going higher, but a lot of things continue to go lower. The problem with deflation is that it's hard to change. Those of you that might remember in the 80s, the Latin American countries, they had runaway inflation. You raise interest rates high enough, that'll stop. Because inflation is just people's demand for goods and services. And so if your inflation's at 12, 13%, jack your interest rates up to 20%. That'll cool your economy down. If your prices are falling 1 or 2%, you can only reduce interest rates to zero. You can't take them negative. Deflation is a real problem. And that's what the Fed was looking at. They were looking at that basically falling off a cliff. And that's why you had all the programs. You can have your various views on whether they were good or bad. This is scary, bottom line. And so I would argue we've come out of that nicely. And if you look at the performance of risk assets, things like stocks and things like currencies and commodities, they very much mimic this picture of inflation. If I were on a desert island, this would be probably the number one indicator I would use. The yield curve would be the second. So again, inflation continues to move higher. It's kind of made its highs, though, and so we'll continue to monitor that. The last two, the C's, are commodities, and I'm going to kind of do the same thing again. In this case, the commodity picture is the orange line, and that's the Commodity Research Bureau Commodity Index. Again, same type thing. It's just showing you what it's done, so you can see there's that big decline in 2008. And what I've overlaid on top of it is the price of emerging market stocks. You can see, again, they're very tightly correlated. When one goes down dramatically, the other one goes down, and vice versa. On the next C, currencies, I've kind of just done the same thing. Is in this case, the currency is now the Australian dollar. That's in orange. And I've just kept that same commodity chart. Again, the levels are different. You can see the Australian dollar, which, by the way, is one of our positions, is actually at higher highs than it was in 2008, whereas commodities are only about half of what they were in 2008. So I'm not saying it's always going to be the same, but directionally speaking, they're very much related. And so one of the challenges you have in a portfolio is right now you're getting into a point where everything kind of moves in tandem. Is it equities, currencies, foreign currencies, and commodities? When one goes up, they all kind of go up. It's difficult to get diversification. That's why you've always got to incorporate fixed income. So that's kind of what I wanted to go over. That gives you a picture of the economy. Right now, the economy continues to improve. It might not feel as much like that here in Michigan, but maybe in some of your businesses you see maybe a little bit of an uptick. Take solace in that. The economy clearly is improving, you know, on a bigger scale. Equities, commodities, foreign currencies continue to basically do well, but there's going to be those periods of quick corrections. Interest rates, the path of least resistance is higher as the economy improves. But I would say that given the dramatic nature of what we had to deal with in 2008 and 2007, don't think that we're completely out of the woods yet. So with that, that's what I wanted to share today. I think we've got a few moments left for discussion or comments or any fruit that you want to throw or whatever you may have. Yeah. It's been working. I mean, you know, you just asked about the stimulus package. I mean, everything that you know is being thrown at the market is working, I would argue. You know, again, I'm just going to look at this. I don't get real political. I'm just looking at it in a binary way. Is that I don't know how many people appreciate how bad it was. and just how close to the edge we were. And I know I keep coming back to that, but I'll stress that. That's why I take the emotion out and just look at what the markets say. I'm not taking a position, not saying right or wrong, saying what does it say? And when you see, you know, that type of drop off like we saw, it's going to take a while to get out of it. So yeah, I think they're definitely working. You know, the Fed initiated another program. You have all the various acronyms of programs. You have the tax cuts have been extended, et cetera. So now that's got implications of its own, because if you don't have to pay higher taxes, you know, what market takes the most advantage of not paying higher taxes? Tax-exempt bonds. One of the worst performing investments you could possibly have over the last 2 months, municipal bonds. So again, you've got to understand how these connect together. You say, okay, stimulus packages, we're going to increase the taxes. We're also going to actually eliminate a type of a bond called the Build America bond. You know, what are the implications of all that? Well, one of the implications is municipals aren't going to do well, and that has certainly been the case. We had something, anything else? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think again, if you look at the prices, and that's, keep in mind, in the bond market, when yields go up, prices go down. And so municipal bond prices have gone down, I think, to reflect some of those exact factors. You know, I think it's Meredith Whitney, probably is my guess. but, yeah, when somebody trumpets how good they've been doing one thing, most of the time I almost think I ought to do the opposite. That's one thing I found in the markets. When somebody has a really strong opinion about something and they just pound the table, I'm almost like, okay, great. You go ahead and sell it to me, I'll buy it. Or you go ahead and sell it and I'll buy it. Whatever you want to do, I'll do the opposite of whatever you want. I think there's clearly concerns there. I think that having a rash of defaults would be very devastating to the future financing capabilities of a lot of these municipalities. They also have taxing authority. In most cases, aside from like Illinois and California, in many cases the states are in decent shape. So I guess I'm not quite as bearish as she is. At the same time, that's the one thing about fixed income is in stocks, you can have a couple stocks in your portfolio, and one might go down a lot, but one of the other ones might go up a lot. In bonds, they only go down a lot. They don't go up a lot. And it's so important when you have bonds to either be in a mutual fund or if you're going to own individual bonds to own a bunch of them. Because if one goes down, and that's a possibility. I mean, there's clearly a possibility. We had Harrisburg, Pennsylvania almost defaulted. And when a bond defaults, that means they can't pay their money back. That means you just go in and see what's left over and you pay the creditors out whatever you have. So you might get 20 cents on the dollar, 10 cents, 50 cents, you're not sure. With bonds, they only go down a lot. They never go up a lot. So you've got to be diversified. And yeah, I think it's a legitimate concern. I don't think it's at the gravity that perhaps she's making it out to, because I think there are other measures that can come into play. But certainly something that I think is being reflected in the markets, and that's why municipals have been one of your worst performing sectors over the past 3 months. Anything? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It was weird. I remember I had a couple of people I could kind of talk to, and at that time I was at J.P. Morgan, and my boss then was someone who'd been in the markets a long time, and I just remember having conversations with him, and I just got the sense that I was seeing it kind of right at the front, and a lot of people weren't seeing it. I remember at that time I was with a smaller church up north, and they've since relocated, and I've kind of stayed in the Glen Lake community. But I remember kind of going to the pastor and saying, I mean, I was kind of helping out with the finances, and I was just saying, there's a tidal wave coming. I mean, I know you don't see it right now in the fall of 2008, but I'm telling you, 2009 is going to be really bad, and we need to prepare for that. And so that's one of the ways that I tried to deal with it. It was just, we were looking at, you know, just disarray at a level that we haven't seen before. And again, we're not completely out. At the same time, I think the integrity of the market's really held up. I know you've read a lot about you know, Goldman doing this and this firm doing that and et cetera, and people kind of cheating or whatever. The markets are so much bigger than anybody is. Nobody can manipulate them. There's a lot of these conspiracy theories. There's just no way. For a limited period of time, perhaps, but not for a long period of time. So the market's integrity held. And again, the one thing that markets do is they always converge to reality. Always. And another thing I'll say, whenever you hear an analyst, because I love to listen to people when they talk, and they say the word hope. In the case, in a Christian sense, hope is a great term. In a market sense, it's a sign of weakness. If somebody's basically rationalizing, and saying, well, I really hope that this does better, which means they know it's not. They don't have the courage to do something different, and they're just basically rationalizing. That's what that means. So anytime you hear someone use the word hope, when you hear them talking about the markets, just think about whatever, just do kind of whatever the opposite is of what they're advocating. That's kind of how I see that. And you know, we have the confidence that our convergence is going to be, you know, to eternal life. So that's pretty cool. Anything else? Well, great. Well, it's about 8 o'clock. So thank you so much for the opportunity, and I'll see you next month.